So I had never ridden a motor scooter before in my entire life. And here I was on, you can see this road now weaving through this like jungle and some of the almost impassable roads going to Brik Go Village in the Chulalongkorn district of Cambodia. And I'm following David Cram up this, and it's one of those things where it's really good for your prayer life, you know. As you're riding, these roads are almost impassable. It was the end of the dry season. So they're basically a big pile of dust, and it's just flying in your face. You have to wear a mask and everything just to keep the dust out of from ingesting too much of it. And as you're driving along, you're going through these jungles and literally driving through creeks, and there's rocks jutting out of the road, and you go over these bridges where there are just holes. Like in the middle of the bridge, there's a hole. You gotta avoid that one. And then as you go through the separate little villages, you're dodging the chickens and the stray dogs and the children that dart out. And the only rule of the road is this. The biggest vehicle wins. You learn that very soon. So we're riding up this, this hill country here, and right over here is a river along the side, and Dave Cram pulls off to the side, and I pull up. I don't know why he's stopping, and he stops, and he goes over, and we look down this cliff. Deep below is this river, and he said, when my boys were young, at the high, like, and during the rainy season, the waters would rise, and my boys would come to this cliff, and we would run and sprint and jump out and fall down like 40 feet down into the water, and he's just having a good time remembering that. And then we look over to the side, and he's like, ah, see that over there? It's just 100 feet away or so. There's this little shack and some man in front of it and a big pile of fruit. And I'm like, okay, what's that? And he's like, well, that's a shrine to the spirit of the river. So everyone who comes by here offers something to the spirit of the river so that it doesn't kill them. Okay. So we hop back on our motor scooters and we literally wind our way up the hill, and the dusk, it's getting kind of dusk as we enter into this village, Brik Go. And as you go in, it's just nothing but this row of these very, very simple stilt homes. They're like one room homes with no electricity, no plumbing, no telephone lines. And we pull in and we're going to visit some of his friends, Lo Kru Chan and Narun. And we pull in, and right across the street, we get off our motorbikes, and across the street is this giant wat. That's their word for a temple. It's the Buddhist temple across the street. And it's just this stark contrast. On the one side are all these pitiful homes, and then on the other side is this glorious wat that every village, no matter how small, no matter how poor, will have a wat in the center of it. And then we wander back, the neighbors all stop and look at the barong, which means like white man. What's a white man doing here? And the yapping dogs and all that. And we walk back, and the neighbor tells us that who we're looking for is in the backyard. So we wander back, and they're sitting under this, like, this, it's like this little platform with this very makeshift thing. This is where they sit during the heat of the day to keep cool. And we go back there, and they're so excited to see us. Of course, we didn't call them or anything. There was no way to get a hold of them. We just show up, and of course, they welcome the interruption. So we show up, and this is, On the left is Lo Kru Chan and his wife, Narun. And so we get there, and there's this platform, and we have to take off our shoes, and you sit there cross-legged on this little platform. It's terribly uncomfortable, but that's what everyone does. And Lo Kru Chan runs off, he goes into the house, and he comes back with this, the most pitiful pot of tea you've ever seen. Like, the pot's actually cracked and everything. And these glasses, and he sets it down on this little tray, and he starts to fill the glasses. And I'm sitting there, and Dave, of course, is talking in their language. And I look at the glasses and I can see the dirt in them, like visible. And I'm just praying that the water is hot enough in that tea to kill the parasites. But he's given us his special tea, so of course I'm going to drink it. So we're sitting there, we're sipping tea, and as we sit there, David, he's translating for us, and we had already had a few of these conversations with a few different people. He wanted me to take the lead. He said, I'll translate for you. Why don't you ask them about themselves? Why don't you ask them about the church there? See, Lo Kru Chan, he's actually an elder among the house churches. There's six house churches, and there's three elders that oversee these six house churches in this district, this large district of Cambodia. So we sit there, and I sit down, and I start asking them about the church. And I ask them, well, how big is your church here that meets here? And they said, oh, there's three people counting us. There's actually probably about four more that come from time to time, but there's only three faithful people. The four that come in and out, it's because, well, they either feel like they have to work 7 days a week so they can't go to church, or there's just so much pressure and persecution that they stopped coming. And then I asked him to describe the service, and it's a lot of the same things we do, just not nearly as electric, right? It's they sing songs, and they read the scriptures, and they pray together, and then he basically leads a Bible study. And then I asked what I really want to know, and this is like, tell me your stories. Like, I want to hear, how did you become the first people in your village to come to Christ? And Lo Kruchan, he's actually a very quiet man. He kind of sits back and smiles and kind of looks at his wife and lets her speak. And she is a fireball. She's just this tiny little woman, about 100 pounds, you know? And yet she's just big, big personality, like the strongest person in the most frail body. So she starts, her eyes light up and she starts telling me this story. She said Lo Kruchan was actually, he was a lay leader in the Wat across the street. He was called in to help with all the funerals and all the marriages and all the things like that. He was a major lay leader over there, and she was a witch doctor. She used spells and incantations and potions to heal people, and yet she said, I could heal others, but I couldn't heal myself. And David stopped and explained that when he first met her, she was about 20 pounds lighter, and that she was very sickly. And so David shows up in their town and offers to take them through a Bible study. And then David fills me in on the backstory here. David had actually given up on this village entirely. Him and his team, they were located in another village, but they would go out to the area villages to just see if there's any interest, any open doors to start new churches. And so they came to this village over and over and over again over the years, and they had zero response. So they would have medical outreaches and educational outreaches and every type of service project you could imagine. And people would show up for that, but no one was interested in Jesus. Well, David had literally said he had written off the entire village, but the doctor on his team wanted to try one last medical mission. And so that day, the one last time, okay, we'll go out one more time. That's the day that David met this couple. And he said they met them, and in her exact words, David asked them, would you be willing to be part of a 12-week Bible study? I'll come back here weekly and teach you about Jesus. And she said, in exact words, I have no idea why, but I said yes. Week after week, David would come and tell them about Jesus, and she said, and I would sit there like this. And the weeks passed by, and the group actually grew from just them to some neighbors, and then there were, eventually the group was up to 8 people. And week after week, one after one, the other started accepting Jesus, started believing the message. And it was just awesome. Like by the end of the time, Chan was very open, but Nerun, she was hard and hard and hard and holding out. They had a lot to lose. Like, he was a major lay leader in the Wat. Like, he would lose his position in the village. She was a witch doctor. She would lose her profession. So as they went along, she was very hard. But by the end of the Bible study, even she came to the conclusion that this is true. So the whole group ended up coming to Christ during that time period. And that's when she said, that's when the spirits came. And so the day that she decided she was going to be baptized, she said she went to bed that night, and as soon as she laid in her bed, snakes came and started chasing her and telling her that they were going to kill her. And she was terrified. And the next night, the same thing happened. And the next night, the same thing happened. She said on the fifth night, they actually drug her out of her bed. And she was so terrified that she cried out in fear, Jesus, save me. She said, Jesus came to her, the snakes fled, and never came back. That sixth day, she knew that Jesus had saved her. She knew that the spirits that she had called on her whole life to heal other people and to manipulate her world, they cowered in fear at the name of Jesus. And she walked out that day with such a sense of power and confidence that Jesus was with her that she went to every single neighbor in her village and told them, "You must stop believing in spirits. Jesus is the only one who can save you." And that's when the persecution began. So that Wat that's on the top of the hill right across from them has loudspeakers. And the purpose of the loudspeakers is that you can hear the chants of the monks and you can hear kind of public service announcements. Well, that's the day that they started denouncing publicly Lo Cruchan and Arun. And every day it got worse and worse, and they started threatening them. They said, "No one in our community is to deal with them. No one is to open your door to them. No one is to accept them." And then they went further. They started threatening that they were going to bring the police in and that anyone who associated with them would be arrested and thrown in prison. It's hard to fathom. I mean, persecution in our world or that type of pressure, if things get too bad, we can pick up and move, right? In this world, your village is all you have. Some of the people have never traveled more than a couple miles beyond their village ever in their lives. There is no social security. There is no insurance. There is no protection from anything in the world. All you have are your neighbors and family. And if all of them reject you, you have nothing. The pressure was so intense that of the original 8 who accepted Jesus, half of them immediately walked away from their faith and went back to the Buddhists. But Chan and Nauru, they stood the test. Her faith started returning, and they're now actually leaders in the house church, like I said. And so I asked them about, how's the persecution now? Like, how do you live in this? And she said, "Oh, I don't really worry about that anymore. But there is one thing that's really bothering me." And I'm like, What's bothering you? Let me hear. She said, I just don't know how Jesus could love me. Like, that's the one thing I still struggle with, knowing what I've done and who I've been. I don't know why Jesus would love me and forgive me. And I don't know how that strikes you. I've given up almost nothing to follow Jesus, right? Like, it's a blessing to follow Jesus in America. And she's given up everything to follow Jesus. And she can't fathom his love for her. Humbling. We sat there and I opened up the scriptures and I read from Psalm 103 to her. "As high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is his love for those who fear him. As far as the east is from the west, so far has he removed our transgressions from us." And then we laid hands on them and we prayed. This is with her youngest son there. And as we left, I don't know if I can put this into words, but I was humbled and I was honored to meet them. And I was just like, this is what we're part of, GVF. Like, this is what the Crams have been doing for the last 16 and 17 years. Like, this is something, I don't know about you, but I felt like I was stepping right into the book of Acts. These are first generation persecuted Christians, people who have to leave everything, who've never even heard the name of Jesus. And it was opening right before my eyes. Over the next 8 days, these stories actually multiplied. This guy right here in the glasses is Lo Kru Moy. He's a police officer, and like every police officer, he made his living by bribes, forcing people to give him exorbitant bribes. And like every normal man in his village, he did what all of them did. They go to the karaoke bar. The karaoke bar is where men go to get drunk and pick up young prostitutes. He was just normal. And then he met Jesus. And he is now the most vocal, leading evangelist and preacher they have among them. He's an honest police officer, which is such an anomaly in that world that they don't even know what to do with him. This is Nal. Nal was originally, there's Dave Cram on the left. Nal was originally, this is at her house, by the way. She lives under there. She was originally just a house help. She came in to help cook some of the food for the Crams. And then she started hearing about this Jesus. And then David asked her about it. You know, like, "What do you think about Jesus? And what do you think about what we shared?" And she said, "Oh, I can't accept Jesus." And David asked, "Why?" She said, "Because I've been having dreams and my great aunt has come to me and told me that if I accept Jesus, she'll kill me." See, people there believe in ancestor worship, and they're very concerned about how their ancestors are taken care of. And David stopped and said, wait a second, what was your great aunt like in life? And she said, oh, she was sweet and nice and kind. And so David said to her, that was not your great aunt. That was a spirit, but that was not your great aunt. You know how she actually came to Christ? She had a vision of Jesus, showed up to her and said, I'm the true God, you should follow me. So she did. She ended up becoming a major partner for the Crams in their ministry. She actually was one of the ones who helped spearhead their ministry to orphans and to saving girls out of the sex trade. And she's carried that on. Even now, she's in utter poverty. The Crams live in another town now. But she, living in utter poverty, let me tell you how poor she is. One of the girls that lives with her, you know what she does to make extra money? She walks around town and picks up cow dung so she can sell it for fertilizer. But even in that poverty, she has five other people that she's taken into her house, including orphans, to care for them, because that's her heart, that in her poverty, she will still share everything she has. On the left here is a woman named Golap, which means rose in Cambodian language. She, you can't notice it in this picture, but her left arm, when she was young, she had an accident, a little accident, something you and I wouldn't think much about, like dislocated her arm, tore some tendons. The problem was that she got no medical care, ever. So her arm never healed. It just hangs limp to the left. Everyone in her village has seen this, and they say, oh, she's cursed. That's why she has it. So no man will marry her. And in that culture, that is a horrible stigma. There's a beautiful, kind, gentle woman that no man would ever marry. And everyone looks at her as cursed. The Crams came into her village and said, you are not cursed. But Jesus was cursed so that you could be blessed. If no other man wants you, he wants you. You have a place in his church. And she now goes out and she serves and loves and blesses the same people who curse her. One more. This is Sokun. I was really taken aback when I first met her because, and that's why I snapped this picture actually. We're at this house church in the middle of nowhere. Dong Hut is in the middle of nowhere. And Dave stopped me to say she is the only Christian in her village and she's under fierce persecution. And he told me the story about how she, on her own, had the courage to get up and still worship Christ and still travel miles and miles to go to church week after week as the only Christian in her village. Story went 3 days later. We got the message that she was actually in the hospital, and we were shocked. We didn't know what was going on. And it turned out that her husband came home drunk, they think, and he stabbed her and strangled her. They took her to the hospital, hours away. And by the time she got to the hospital, she had lost tons of blood. But here's the deal. The hospital, they won't give you blood until they're sure you can pay for it. So the house churches had all called like emergency meetings. They took all their offering at all six house churches to pay for blood for her. And I heard this, and the Crams were ready to pay out of their own wallet. I heard this, and I was like, are you joking? This woman's going to die over $300. And so Bob Derico gave me permission. I just made a decision. We're paying for this. We sent off some money. the money went, but it was too little too late because they had withheld the blood. And she died the next day. And this is the world of Cambodian Christians. It is a world, persecution and violence and injustice and curses and demonic forces and poverty and idolatry and prostitution and witch doctors and death. But it is also a world of healing and power and forgiveness, a place where at the name of Jesus, the serpent, the demonic forces flee. It's a world where women find the courage to stand for Jesus Christ in life and in death. It's a place where people are crushed They're pressed down, but they're pressed but not crushed, persecuted but not abandoned, struck down but not destroyed. And let me tell you that God is doing something amazing in Cambodia. Church, we get the privilege of supporting a couple that is part of this amazing work of God today. So David and Sonia Cram, they came to Cambodia, which if you don't know where it's at, it's on the complete opposite side of the world between Vietnam and Thailand there. They came to Cambodia in 1998 because they had heard this very clear calling that they were called by God to proclaim the gospel where people had never heard, to plant churches where there had been none. So the scriptures call this an apostolic gifting or calling. So the apostle Paul actually refers to himself this way. He says this in Romans. It has always been my ambition to preach the gospel where Christ was not known so that I would not be building on someone else's foundation. This is exactly what the Crams are called to do. So this is why the Crams came to Cambodia so long ago. When they arrived, just to give you a little bit of context, in 1998, when they arrived in Cambodia, out of the 8 million people there, there were only 300 Christian missionaries in the country, and the number of Christians was 0.01% Christian. Do you understand? One out of every 1,000 people was considered a Christian at that time. Millions of people had no access to the gospel, no access to churches, and the dominant religion was this, was Buddhism. This is a Wat, and one of the tiny little villages, but they give so much money to it that this fantastic Wat could be in the center of it. You see the saffron robes of the monks there. The Buddhism there is, I don't know what you've heard of Buddhism. I don't know, for me, I had these kind of idyllic, like, 7 years in Tibet, like, Hollywood versions of Buddhist, and it sounded really romantic and idyllic. But the fact of the matter is that this is nothing like that. It is controlling and fear-driven. It is, it's really unlike anything I could have expected. They have a very strong sense, so forming this culture is the idea of reincarnation and karma. That what you did in your previous existence determines what happens in your life right now. So if something bad happens to you, it was because of you had it coming. So let's unpack this for a minute. Dave Cram shows up in 1998 and he sees this crowd of people, doesn't even speak the language yet. He sees the crowd of people standing around on the road and he kind of shuffles through the crowd and goes up to the front. And you know what he sees? There had been an accident, motor scooter accident. The guy had wrecked and was literally sitting there in the middle of the street, bleeding out, dying. And everyone's just standing there watching. And Dave was just incensed by that. Why in the world is no one helping him? Like, what are you doing? Why are you just sitting there, standing there, watching him die? And the answer he later would discover was this. Because the man had bad karma, there was nothing we could do for him. Buddhism in Cambodia is this mix of Hinduism and animism and ancestor worship. So almost every house you come to, they're going to have this little altar right outside their house with incense and offerings that they give to their ancestors. The many people you'll see have a string around their waist. It's a talisman. Do you know what that is? It's this thing that protects them from evil spirits. So when they do ministry there, when they come to baptism, which I got to see these three ladies be baptized. Lo Kru Moy, you know what he says to them when they come down into the water of baptism? He says, no one in here may wear a string. You must cut your strings if you're going to be baptized into the name of Jesus. You cannot trust in magic and spirits and follow Jesus. You must choose. Cut your strings. I love that. So this worldview of ancestors and Hinduism and karma and all this really influences how the Crams do their ministry. According to Dave, 50% of all the people that have come to Christ in their time there have been through what he would call a power encounter. You've heard some of these. It's a vision, a healing, a demonstration that Jesus is more powerful than the spirits and the monks. So I actually got to witness this. We were getting ready to take off for one of the other villages one day. And a guy came out and he was just kind of a friend of the people who owned the house. And he knew that we were men of God. So he came up to us and he said, he explained to Dave that he had been having these horrible kidney stones and just in terrible pain for weeks. And he asked, He didn't believe in Jesus at all, but asked if we would pray for him. So we laid hands on him, prayed for him, didn't think much about it. Got on our motor scooters, were gone all day. When we got back that night, he came to us and said, "I feel better. I think I believe." And that, Dave said, is how so many people come to know Jesus. Like Jesus will show them his power, and that lets down their guard so that they can actually hear the gospel of what he did for them. When the Krams first came to Cambodia, this is a close-up, in 1998, that was the same year that Pol Pot, I don't know if you guys know who Pol Pot is, he was a dictator who killed one out of every four Cambodians. One out of every four. So he was still alive. He had been out of power for years, but he was still having this massively terrible influence on those people. And he had basically wrecked the whole world. That was the year that he actually killed himself. And so everything, when Dave and Sonia first showed up, it was politically unstable. There were literally, along both the Vietnam and the Thai border, there were literally hundreds of thousands of landmines. So passerbyers all the time were just blowing themselves up. At the same time, the infrastructure was like that. Yeah, it was just complete wreck. There was no rule of law, and weapons were readily accessible. So this is one thing. If you ever go to, I was actually mad at David Cram for not telling me this. If you go to Cambodia for $200, you can shoot a bazooka. For a little extra, you can shoot one at a cow. I was like, who knew? This is a major tourist attraction there. This is where I was at. So the Krams show up in this world that is terribly broken and this country that is full of just, And they go and they learn the language. They move to this district called Chulong where there were no churches, none. And the Krams practice what we would call incarnational ministry. You know, the same way that Jesus was incarnated, he became like us, live among us to save us, right? So they followed Jesus' lead and they actually moved. This is the street that they actually lived on for 8 years. If you go, what does it mean to be incarnational? Well, you shop at the same markets that people shop at. You eat the same foods they eat. This is a shop directly down the, in front of the house that they lived at for 8 years, directly down the street. This is where they lived. They just lived in the mung. So if the people slept on those hard mats, they slept on those hard mats. If the people went to the market every day and cooked their food like that, they did that. If people sat on the floor, they sat on the floor. If people drove motos, they drove a moto. If people took cold bucket showers, which I did for 2 weeks, they did that. They lived among them. And the reason is once living among them, then they had the right to not only share the gospel, but to serve them. So they were all about a ministry of word and deed. So they would come out and they would definitely tell people about Jesus. But when they did it, they always served the most pressing needs of the community, education, medical. This is why they started while they were there rescuing girls out of the sex trade. This is why while they were there, they started helping with the orphan programs. So they had this ministry that was incarnational. They're living in a simple house, a ministry of word and deed, and it was extremely effective in that region. They went from zero churches to now there are 6 self-sustaining house churches with over 70 Christians. Here's a picture of one of the house churches we visited. So there are 6 churches like this. This is actually a house that just people meet in, but of over 70 Christians in this district now. And so for the past 2 years, Dave and Sonia, 2 years ago, they actually backed out of this ministry because they didn't want to interfere anymore. They wanted these churches to become autonomous. So they pulled away. These churches are now entirely run by their own elder board, by their own financing, they make their own decisions, their own preaching, everything. And so it's been extremely successful. For the past 2 years, David and Sonia have actually been teaching in a Bible school. And one thing I want to point out, there's always a cost to doing ministry. And I don't want to overstate this, but when you live like a villager, you suffer like a villager. And now David and Sonia would never come here and complain, but I'm going to complain for them. They actually love their life. Right? I mean, they are having a ball. They feel like they're doing what God has called them to do. They're passionate about it. They love these people. They love it. Right? But the fact of the matter is both of them are ruining their backs by riding on motos everywhere. Sonia has had a cough for 2 years. They've basically missed the entire lives of their parents, brothers, sisters, nephews, nieces. The cost has been immense. Now that 2 years are up, though, in the city of Phnom Penh, where they've been teaching at a Bible college, they're getting ready to embed in a new people group. I just want to close with this. There are these people in Cambodia, in southern Cambodia, the Chua people. There's a group of 50,000 people that have been in that region for over 500 years, and they are Muslim Cambodians, okay? They believe that people from Indonesia, just south of here, came up and moved into, intermarried with Cambodians about 500 years ago, and that's how that came. And this people group, in 500 years, has never had a Christian church among them, ever, in 500 years. Well, the Krams have been praying about this, and they've been trying to get a bunch of other people to go there, but no one else will seem to go. So they're taking that as God's call that they need to go. So this September, they're looking to move there and actually permanently embed in this new village, a new village in that region, and live among these Muslim Cambodians to bring them the gospel where they've never heard it before. So right now they're in an exploratory phase where they'll go out there at least once a month. They'll go out there, go to the villages, and they'll go from coffee shop to coffee shop. They'll go from home to home, and they'll just talk to people. They'll just pray fervently and then talk to people about Jesus and see if there's an open door somewhere that they could possibly move into the village and possibly start a church there. I get to do this for one day with Dave, and this is where we started. Believe it or not, this is from Google Street View. Isn't that awesome? So this is the actual coffee shop we were at. We're sitting there. This is the very first coffee shop. We ride in our motos. We parked. And then I was actually sitting in this chair right here, this actual chair. Dave was right there. And soon we start talking to the owner about Jesus. And about Dave does this brilliant way of taking the Muslim prophets to point to Jesus, the need for Jesus. And right across the street, you can't see it here, but right across the street is the mosque and the school. And so this crowd starts gathering around us. Soon there's 14 people. We're all circled around our table, and we're just like handing out Gospel of Luke and Jesus film, and Dave's just telling everybody. And then, as you might imagine, it's not always friendly in a Muslim community talking about Jesus. And one guy got really mad, and he started screaming at us, and he told us that Jesus did not die, because that's a Muslim doctrine. And so then the entire crowd dispersed. People started handing back all the stuff that he'd just given us, and soon everyone was gone except one. There's one young guy sitting there. We found out that he was actually an Arabic teacher, and he, even though everyone else left, he was very interested in what David said, and he said, you know, I teach kids Arabic so that they can learn the Quran, but I've never heard these stories before, and I really want the kids in my class to hear these stories. He invited me and David to come back later that night and actually teach his class these stories about Jesus that he had never heard before. So we sit there and we start debating in that conversation. Dave wasn't sure if it was a good idea because there's all kinds of pressure and getting in with kids. And I mean, there's a lot of things that could go wrong there. He eventually told me a story about a friend of his that went into a Muslim village, did the same thing, and got chased out of the village with an axe. So we're sitting there debating, and then he's like, I know this is an open door and the first one I've had among these people. I think we need to take it. So we spend the whole day going to coffee shops and stuff like that. And then later that night, we show up and there's a whole bunch of young kids, and Dave just goes for it. Okay, I'm going to tell all these kids about Jesus. All these kids that are here to learn the Quran, I'm going to tell them about Jesus. And so we're sitting there, and it's going great, actually. The teacher's really, really excited. And then suddenly, as we're Dave gets about halfway through. He builds up to it. He's starting with, Adam and Eve, and goes to Abraham, goes to Moses, and he just now gets to Jesus. And right before he starts talking about Jesus, another moto pulls up, and there's this old guy who just looks like he just killed someone. He's the headmaster of the school. And he pulls up, and he already just arrives angry. He's just angry. Dave and I are both like, we both sit down like, do you want to talk now? And the teacher says, no, you keep talking, type of thing. So Dave then proceeds to tell the kids about Jesus in front of the headmaster. The headmaster's sitting there, and I can tell that Dave is tense, which is just making my head's full of images of getting chased out of town with an axe. I'm like, I think I can outrun Dave, though, so I'm good. So I'm sitting there, and as he's talking, I promise you, the headmaster just looks furious. And I am praying hard. And that's when I'm sitting there on my little chair, and I pull my cell phone out of my pocket and do one of these deals, and text Bob DiRico, my wife, pray for us. And we sit there, and Dave finishes, and we're both like, okay, time to go, let's go. But the teacher stopped us at the door and said, no, I want you to spend 10 more minutes telling the kids about the way to heaven. And so he goes back, and he starts telling the kids again in front of the furious headmaster about the way to heaven through Jesus Christ alone. And then we finish, and the teacher invites Dave to come back to teach again. And the headmaster, we have no idea why, but invited us over to his house for fruit. And I have no explanation for it except that people were furiously praying for us. And this is the first open door we've seen to the gospel ever in this community. It might be the first opening they've ever seen in 500 years. You understand? This is the work that we get to support. This is what we get to be part of. In church, we better be praying. Do you hear me? The stakes are ridiculously high. Like, this is life and death. I mean, the very least that can happen is they could just get booted out of the community, but they could literally be killed. We're talking about persecuted Christians here. This is a place that if God doesn't work in healing and visions and power, then the crams are just, their words are useless. We better be praying. In the same way that in that classroom, my wife and Bob DiRico were crying out to God for us, the crams need this all the time. The Christians in Cambodia need this all the time. And I would say all of our missionaries need this all the time. In the next couple of weeks, we're going to give you more information about all of our missionaries. And I'm not going to tell you which one. I want you to be led by the Spirit to choose which one God's laying on your heart. But choose one and commit to faithfully, regularly finding out about them and how you can pray for them. And the other thing I want to say is that, church, we need to be giving sacrificially. Dave would never, ever, ever in a million years share this with you. That's why I did not ask his permission. I'm just going to share it. They have virtually no retirement. They don't have enough money to go visit their kids. He couldn't afford to buy his wife a house in Cambodia. When Sekun's bleeding to death, he personally pays for that. When they go to the Muslim villages, he personally pays for that. Like, all of this is just his cost, and they just pour it out joyfully, but it has cost them enormously. Church, we have at least four other missionaries, not including the Crams, that are under-supported. People who are giving up things that we would consider absolutely basic to life, like seeing your kids, to do this high, high calling. Church, we don't have to, but we have the opportunity to bless them, to say, what you're doing is important. And if I have to eat rice and beans to do it, I can support you. I can bless you. I can encourage you in this. Next week, we're going to have information about all the missionaries, and I don't care which one. But I want you to pray about it, and I want you to choose one to support. Even if it's $25 a month, do it every month. Give to them. I promise you, this money is going to things that you can't even imagine. Versus another meal out. Or another gadget. Man, it's such a great investment. Church, my vision is that we would be a church that our heart burns with a passion for God's glory around the globe. That we have the same heart that God has, that we pray that our kids would receive the high calling to take the gospel where it's never been heard before. that we would be a church that gives sacrificially to see God's name glorified in the nations.